Chapter 36. Without warning. My cross-cultural adventure continued. My relationship with the drop-dead gorgeous Greek oyster baron had settled into a comfortable routine, and I reveled in the novelty of our fascinating exchanges. For me, all aspects of our relationship were endlessly absorbing. Yanni owned a first-floor flat with ocean views at Maroubra, a beachside suburb of Sydney. After work, he drove there to shave, shower, and dress for our evening together. Returning home from my day at the Argent Manufacturing Company, I too would shower and change, ready to be picked up, to eat out somewhere. We had a long list of restaurants we liked, and would occasionally explore others that had been recommended, or on spec, with money being no object. I really enjoyed Yanni's company. He was 11 years older than me. Handsome, wealthy and wise, with masses of life experience, he possessed the uncanny ability to instantly identify people's character traits, which no doubt contributed to his success in business. From the outset, I'd made it quite clear I wasn't interested in formalizing our relationship by humorously suggesting that he marry a suitable Greek virgin, and have me on the side. All jokes aside, at the time, I didn't realize the danger an arrangement of this kind could create. Over dinner, Yanni would recount stories of his life, growing up in Asopos, a small village on the Peloponnese, before he made the life-changing decision to come to Australia. In Greece, his passion for high-performance engines was heightened by 2 years of training as an aircraft engine mechanic with the Hellenic Air Force. This was part of his compulsory military service that began when he was 19. At the same time, Yanni indulged his other passion, fast motorbikes. His band of black leather-clad bikey mates zoomed all over the Peloponnese raising hell. But it wasn't enough for his adventurous spirit, he wanted more. On the strength of reports coming back to his village from Australia, describing the money-making opportunities to be had here, he made the momentous decision to buy a ticket, farewell his family, and take a ship to Sydney to try his luck. He spoke not a word of English. At the start, he shared a room in a Greek household with three other immigrant men, and worked two jobs. One as a waiter at a Greek nightclub, the other shucking oysters for a wholesaler. He realized he was good at it, and began making plans to start his own oyster business. In the early days, he'd prize oysters off the rocks around Sydney Harbour and sell them. When I met him, he'd been in business for some years, employing other Greeks and making a lot of money. At this time I was suffering from itchy feet, as my regular trips to visit my parents in New Guinea and Africa had ceased, because I now had a full-time job with limited annual holidays, and considerable mortgage commitments. Casting around, air hostessing seemed a possible solution, so I applied for a job with Qantas and was quite quickly called to interview. My friend Richard Carlson worked for Qantas, as did the flatmates of a co-worker, Jim, who, in preparation for my interview, kindly offered to arrange a meeting with them to discuss the do's and don'ts. Yanni smelled a rat, and said so, but I waved away his concern. As arranged, Jim picked me up and took me to his flat, where there was no sign of his flatmates. Instead, I found a romantic dinner table set for two. Dinner hadn't been mentioned. But as Jim had gone to so much trouble, I politely worked my way through the meal, and afterwards, asked to be driven to Yanni's flat in Maroubra. When I arrived at his door unannounced, and completely freaked out, he smiled knowingly and said, "I told you so, my beautiful." And then drove me home. The day of my Qantas interview dawned. Richard drove me out to the recruiting office at Kingsford Smith Airport in plenty of time for my appointment. I looked the part. My now, slender Weight Watchers figure, dressed in a stylish pink suit, with navy blue buttons and saddle stitching, and matching navy accessories, stockings, shoes, matching handbag and silk scarf. After the introductory pleasantries, the interviewer went on to describe passenger vomit in graphic detail, explaining that spew cleanup was part of the job. I was unprepared for his word pictures, and it was downhill from there. My application was unsuccessful. I reluctantly sucked up my disappointment, forced to accept my being paid to travel plans had stalled. In the meantime, my life with the Greeks continued to be diverse and interesting. As my relationship with Yanni deepened, I learned more about him. Sadly, he hadn't known his father, who was killed by Italian troops when they invaded Greece, shortly after he was born. Yanni's widowed mother and her two other sons survived the war and resumed their semi-subsistence village lifestyle, growing olives and citrus, as well as tending extensive vegetable gardens. Fast forward to 1973, Sydney. It was impossible for Yanni to grow vegetables at his Maroubra flat, because all the open ground surrounding the building was covered with concrete. But my house had an east-facing backyard with soil. It was summertime, so Yanni prepared the ground, then planted tomatoes. Each afternoon, when he came to pick me up for dinner, he'd make a beeline for the tomatoes. He'd water them, and apply Daris dust when necessary, all the while coaxing them to grow. Thanks to Yanni's dedication, we had a bumper crop of flavorsome tomatoes that summer. Yanni had purchased a block of land at Earlwood, a suburb not far from Annandale. It was an unusual block on a sandstone ledge, with an area carved out at street level for car parking. Steep wooden steps led to the top, where a team of Greek builders were constructing a two-story house, with a swimming pool jack hammered out of the sandstone. Occasionally we would visit the site on the way to dinner. As an artist, I was struck by Yanni's choice of building materials. Blonde brick, silver-framed aluminium windows, amber feature glass framing the front door, and lastly, red shag pile carpet. But it wasn't my house, so I kept my interior decoration opinions to myself. I didn't think to ask him why he was building a house, as it was none of my business. But it wasn't long before I found out. Over dinner one Friday night, Yanni dropped a bombshell. He quietly announced, "My beautiful, I'm 33 years old and I've got to get married before it's too late." He was well aware I wasn't a contender, as I'd no interest in marriage or children, so I replied, "Yanni, do what you have to do." He went on to tell me he planned to attend the regular Saturday night gathering of marriageable Greek girls and their chaperones held at the Greek Church Hall in Newtown, with matchmaking their objective. True to his word, the following evening he went, checked out what was on offer, and made his selection. He was engaged the next day, and married 3 months later. I was heartbroken. I didn't realize how much I cared for him. Even though my world had fallen apart, I managed to continue working Monday to Friday, but weekends were the worst. I cried, and cried, and cried. My former partner Charlie hovered, and concerned friends gathered me up in a futile attempt to relieve my unspeakable emotional pain. It was difficult for Yanni too. He came to visit one dark night, parking his car in the back lane to avoid being observed by passing Greeks, and we cried together. But he'd made his decision and there was no turning back. On reflection, Yanis Aronis. At the beginning of our association, I considered Yanni an amusing dalliance, and I'm embarrassed to admit I behaved like an uppity snob, that is, until I got to know him. Facts. Yanis Aronis was born and raised in Asopos, at the southern end of the Peloponnese, 70 kilometers southeast of Sparta, the city famous for producing the fearsome warrior class of ancient Greece. The village isn't far from the Ionian Sea, which probably explains Yanni's innate understanding of the sea and its bounty, and that led him to found a lucrative oyster business in Sydney after immigrating. Yanni was extremely proud of his Greek heritage, and when asked, he defined himself as a Spartan. Conscription in 1960s Greece. As I understand it, military service was considered a rite of passage all over Greece, particularly in remote villages like Yanis. At 19, all young men were required to sign up for compulsory military service. Yanni spent his 2 years with the Air Force, fixing aircraft engines. This militaristic mindset still lingers, possibly the result of the nationalistic belief encapsulated in the Greek proverb. Women have birth, men have the army. Reinforcing the expectation that both genders will serve the motherland without question. A woman's role to give birth to the men who will defend it. A necessity for the Greeks who have been invaded and occupied, on and off, for millennia.